Welcome to another edition of Generations Radio. I'm Adam McManus in for Kevin Swanson. We continue our conversation now with Dr. Erwin Lucer. He is the pastor emeritus of the Moody Church in Chicago, Illinois, served as the senior pastor for 36 years, a graduate at Winnipeg Bible College, Dallas Theological Seminary, and Loyola University, the featured speaker on three radio programs heard on more than 1,000 outlets, including Running to Win, a daily Bible teaching broadcast. He's written a number of great books, including Rescuing the Gospel, The Cross and the Shadow of the Crescent, One Minute After You Die, When a Nation Forgets God, and Hitler's Cross, which was the Christian Booksellers Gold Medallion Award winner. But today we're talking about his latest book, We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. And we pick up here in Chapter 5, entitled Sell It as a Noble Cause. You cite George Orwell's novel 1984 and the chilling totalitarian state with its ministry of truth, which brainwashed the people. The slogan of Oceana is war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. How do you connect the dots to us today?
Well, what I point out in that chapter, it's really a chapter on propaganda. How does propaganda work? The purpose of propaganda is to so shape people's view of reality that even when confronted with a mountain of evidence, they will not change their minds. So I point out how language is used, how fear and intimidation is used, and so forth, to bring about the kind of propaganda that they desire.
How is the devil like a trapper?
What he does is he knows what we desire, and he promises one thing and then gives another. He promised Adam and Eve that if they ate the fruit of the tree, they would be like God. They thought that they were getting a bargain, and they didn't know that they were getting devastation. The devil promises, but what he promises is very different than what you expect.
To put a fine point on it, the trapper's offering meat, but he's concealing the deadly trap underneath that'll maim or kill the animal.
Exactly. That's what Satan wants to do, is he conceals it. If you're a mouse, as all of us know, you know, you can catch them with cheese. You can catch, of course, other animals with meat. But the trap is always concealed, but it is there.
What was one form of propaganda tobacco companies used to get women to smoke openly, which they had not done up to 1926?
This is really a fascinating story. The question is, how do you get women to smoke? What the guy did, I think his name was Burnell, he said, we are going to tell women that cigarettes are torches of freedom. So they marched through a street in New York with cameras there.
On Easter Sunday.
On Easter Sunday. And what they were doing is smoking. These were torches of freedom. And after that, every woman wanted to smoke because she wanted to be free.
And she wanted to be accepted by her fellow ladies because it had previously been considered beneath a woman to smoke, certainly publicly.
This was her means of liberation.
When Hitler starved children, he called it, quote, putting them on a low-calorie diet, end quote. The extermination of Jews was called cleansing the land. Euthanasia was referred to as the best of modern therapy. This propaganda was all quite calculated, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, and that's exactly what happens today, where abortion is referred to as health care or a woman's right to choose or reproductive equality. There's a phrase for you right there that really hides something very sinister.
How did the homosexual activists of our era, I thought this was fascinating when I read this in your book, borrow propaganda ideas from Adolf Hitler, of all people?
Well, you know, there are a number of things there that I mention in the chapter. One of them is to so thoroughly vilify those who are opposed to them that no one will want to associate with them. The other point to be made is that they wanted to portray themselves as victims, because if you portray yourself as a victim, others will have sympathy for you. And they will say, oh my, I have to take your side in this debate. So through using these kinds of techniques, they really did win the argument in America. And that's why you have the whole range of LGBTQ plus community today.
They made those who opposed their lifestyle to be nasty, haters. And they connected it with the fight for racial equality, a false equivalency to be sure.
Exactly. When you use the phrase civil rights and you hitch it onto something, it's pretty hard to argue against that because everybody wants to be in favor of civil rights.
I love how you talk about the propaganda the devil sold to Adam and Eve. Talk about that.
The propaganda is that you shall be like God, knowing good and evil. And to a certain extent, he was right. Adam and Eve, they knew good and evil now by experience. God knows good and evil intellectually, but he is free from committing evil. Adam and Eve were going to now experience evil in a very horrible way. Once again, you have propaganda. The devil says one thing, and you get the impression that he's going to deliver something good, and in point of fact, you receive something that is evil and destructive.
The devil sold slavery as independence, sold mental darkness as wisdom, sold guilt as fulfillment, and sold despair as pride. Just absolutely fascinating. You write, George Orwell said, the further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those who speak it. Boy, if that's not applicable today, I don't know what is.
It is not enough for the radicals to simply take that which is evil and call it good. Then their agenda is only half fulfilled. What they also have to do is to take that which is not only evil and call it good, but that which is good has to turn out as being evil. They not only want to exalt the evil, they want to denigrate and speak against the good and vilify the good.
Where does the term gaslighting come from when we're describing a form of manipulation that attempts to sow seeds of doubt in the target?
Well, you know, it comes from a movie that was made many, many years ago. But the main idea is this. Where you so bombard people with a different view of reality so that no matter how absurd it is, they will actually begin to accept it and they'll be able to doubt their own sanity. Certainly, we see this in certain marriages where you have narcissists and abusers who use this to try to so confuse their wives or their husbands where there is no rationality left. But let's apply it to the culture. I just read recently that a student was expelled for saying that a man can never become a woman. Now, can you think of anything more rational than that statement? It is confirmed by biology. You don't have to believe the Bible to know that that's it. You need to know something about the DNA to know that that is a true statement. And yet, the absurdity that a man can become a woman, what we must do is to understand that we are driven today by ideology, not facts. So that's gaslighting, where you have an ideology, no matter how irrational it is put forth despite all of the contrary evidence until people begin to actually believe the absurd.
My guest is Dr. Erwin Lutzer, author of the book We Will Not Be Silenced, responding courageously to our culture's assault on Christianity. You're listening to Generations Radio. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson. When we come back, I'll ask Dr. Lutzer about why he believes France chose not to defeat the Nazi insurgents, which it could have in 1939.
Attention, homeschool parents. Here at Generations, we know that finding literature curriculum that engages your children's minds and helps them develop a strong Christian worldview can be an overwhelming task. That's why we've developed a Christian discipleship-focused literature curriculum that's centered around the most important work of literature ever written, the Word of God. Not only do our Bible-centric courses seek to place Christ at the head of literature studies, but they will also teach your children how to analyze all literature from a Christian perspective, enabling them to be more than conquerors in today's battle of worldviews. By introducing them to the essential stories of the faith, along with the written works of history's best Christian authors, our literature curriculum provides the bedrock for a firm foundation of faith in the hearts of your children. So, get started today with Generations Christian Discipleship Curriculum and watch your children embark on an incredible journey towards strengthening their faith and discovering the greatest Christian stories ever told. You can learn more and browse our selection of carefully curated works at generations.org/curriculum. That's generations.org/curriculum.
Welcome back to Generations Radio. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson. My guest is Dr. Erwin Lutzer, author of the new book entitled We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. You write, France could have invaded Hitler's Germany in 1939 and likely defeated the Nazi insurgents. Why didn't France do that?
They feared that there would be deaths. They would lose some men, and that, of course, would have been true.
They said it was better to kneel speaking German than be killed speaking French.
In other words, better to surrender to the radicals than to lose your life. That, of course, is oftentimes true in church history, where people have given in to evil and temptation and the pressure of the culture because they have said that it is better to do that than for me to lose my life. But, Adam, it's so important to realize that the martyrs spoke a different kind of language. They said there are some things more important than losing my life, and that is to stand on the basis of truth and honor Jesus.
In chapter 6, entitled Sexualize the Children, you point to the fact that in 2004, the Pew Research polls showed 60% of Americans opposed homosexual marriage, while today only 40% oppose it. To what do you attribute that dramatic change?
I think the big change has come about because of social media and the internet. I begin that chapter by making the point that the cell phone in your teenager's hand will do more to shape his or her view of reality than an hour of church and an hour of Sunday school. And unfortunately, Adam, even Christian parents are no longer raising their children. The culture does, and it does it through technology.
You didn't pull any punches when you wrote, quote, perhaps nowhere do we see the work of Satan in America as clearly as we do in the sexualization of children, destroying their identity, confusing their gender, and creating unresolved guilt and self-hatred, end quote. It's really both heartbreaking and enraging, isn't it?
It is, and what we need to say to parents is this, that ultimately, whether you send your child to public school or they're homeschooled, the point is God holds parents responsible for the education of their children. No matter where they go, parents need to be on top of that child's education. They need to know what the textbooks are. They need to know what is being said and what is being taught. Because I think in that context, I quote Hitler, who said, he who controls the youth controls the future.
You note that MSNBC host Melissa Harris Perry said, quote, we have to break through our private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities, end quote. Is that view atypical or representative of the secular left today?
Well, I think it's representative of the secular left. And if people have been following the argument, it's something that Marx would have applauded. In other words, we have to take the responsibility of raising a child from the parents and give it to the state and to the community because parents can't be trusted. They might teach their children about God and the Bible and take them to church.
How do these sexually graphic discussions in the public schools serve to advance their cultural Marxist goals?
By the destruction of the family and the confusion of children. You see, if you can take children out of their God-given roles as boys and girls and tell them they can switch and they can be this or they can be that, that kind of confusion destroys the family. And as we talked previously, it is so important in Marxism that the family be destroyed.
How are Christian colleges and seminaries themselves being impacted by the homosexual transgender agenda pushed by the cultural Marxists?
Well, all that you have to do is to look at what happened to Baylor University recently. They changed their standards and they said that they were evolving and that the previous standard of being opposed to the LGBT community was being revised. Or you can also look in the state of Missouri and you can take the College of the Ozarks, and a lawsuit is being filed against the federal government because the government is saying that if the students receive Pell Grants, and that is given, you know, to students who are needy. If students receive that, then they have to be willing to put transgender men, that is to say, somebody who was born biologically a man, but he now identifies as a woman, they have to be in the same dormitories and the same rooms as those who are born girls and have maintained their God-given identity. The important thing that people need to understand is that wherever the government's hand goes, it soon turns into a fist. What you have is not only the cultural pressure now, but you have the legal pressure that is being put on Christian schools.
When men dress up like drag queens in these lurid outfits with excessive makeup in America's libraries, Dr. Lutzer, why do you think parents take their preschool children to hear them read?
Because they don't know any better. They don't understand the agenda. If you don't have any firm values and any deep roots in rationality and the scripture, you just think it's cute. You have no idea what's happening, of course, because of the demonic activity that is involved in situations like that. And to you, you just want to be on the edge of culture and on the side of history and have your kids enjoy the transgender moment.
Since the Supreme Court legalized homosexual faux marriage in 2015, transgenderism has swept the country. And now this perverted idea of the throuple, a threesome relationship, followed by polyamory or multiple relationships. Do you think justification of pedophilia is far behind in America?
No, I think it's the next thing. It's the next domino to fall. In fact, there are books and articles written in favor of it. Once you leave rationality, biology, and the Bible behind, there is no stopping point, really. You know, people always think, well, you can stop at a certain point. No, you're in a free fall and you can't stop in a certain point. That's exactly what is happening today.
You write that Jesus was not neutral when it came to children. Parents today really are raising lambs among wolves, aren't they?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, when you stop to think of it, oftentimes when parents give their children to the public schools, it is a matter of lambs being raised by wolves. Once again, we can only emphasize what we've said before, the need for parents to take responsibility for the education of their children. No matter how those children are educated, the parents need to know exactly what is being said and what's happening.
I love what you said in your book, We Will Not Be Silenced. You write, godlessness and aberrant sexuality always go hand in hand.
And that's because we are born as sexual beings. And if we don't stay within the parameters that God has given, once we board the train, we end up taking it all the way to the station. And that station, of course, is a very destructive place. It's a destructive station.
In Chapter 8, Dr. Lutzer, entitled Join with Radical Islam to Destroy America, you note that radical Islamists and radical secularists are fighting side by side. Why is that? It seems like an odd pairing at first blush.
For now, they are friends. Eventually, of course, they will part ways. But what the radical left sees is that Islam can be used as a battering ram against Christianity because they have a common enemy. What's that statement that the military always uses, that the enemy of my enemy is my friend? So what they can do is to work together because they're interested in destroying Christianity and capitalism. You will see the ACLU actually defend the teaching of Islam in schools. You know, they, of course, oppose it totally in terms of Christianity. I give examples of parents who have objected to what is happening. You have them being called Islamophobic. You have them being called by various names of being bigots and so forth. You know, if the tables were turned and we were talking about Christians in the school, well, you, of course, can fill in the blank. I mean, when you stop to think of the response of Christianity being taught in our schools.
The Muslim Brotherhood actually has concocted a plan to destroy America. What is it?
Really, it is a multifaceted plan. It has to do with taking over banks in our schools, that there be Muslim food, halal food. And by the way, our tax dollars are being used to build prayer rooms for Muslim students in our schools. That would never happen for Christians. It's to approach the culture in many different ways, including immigration. That's a part of it. I think I quote the Quran in a number of places that talks about immigration as a way to propagate the faith. And then lack of assimilation. So you have all of these different ways that are being used. And of course, you always use your rights to be able to promote your faith. In this way, incrementally, you begin to gain power and hopefully gain control. And then you, of course, deny that Islam is involved in such things as terrorism. Christian dialogues within churches, I think I deal with that too. This is so wrong. In the book, I quote a book written by Muslims for Muslims on how to make Islam palatable to Americans.
In other words, these so-called ecumenical or interfaith dialogues appeal perhaps to the evangelical Christians' desire to love their neighbors themselves, but in the meantime, by elevating the Muslim leader on the platform within the church itself, no less, to equal in terms of theological significance, is to both diminish Christianity and elevate Islam.
And the other thing that's so important is that during these dialogues, if there is a debate that takes place at a university and so forth, that's fine. But these dialogues, the rules are you do not correct the person. So a Muslim can stand up in a church and say the most glorious things about Islam, which are totally wrong, and it goes along without being corrected. And I point out how that they try to show that Muhammad was in favor of civil rights for women and other groups and so forth.
Mm.
And this is what is to be taught. And nobody stands up and says, no, that's absolutely wrong. So it really becomes a means of propaganda, and many Christians are falling for it.
The Muslims transformed Indonesia, you note, from a Buddhist and Hindu country to the largest Muslim-dominated country in the world, didn't they?
They did, and I'm not sure exactly how all of that happened. But again, I have no doubt that they were appealing to people's sense of love and oftentimes being naive. They used propaganda to try to show that their religion was superior, and the rest is history.
In Chapter 9, entitled Vilify, 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 you explain that Saul Alinsky, the Marxist community organizer, had a way to shut people down. What was his secret?
Yeah, what Saul Alinsky used to do is to say, shame people. In other words, don't go after ideas. Don't make this a debate about issues, but rather bring people to shame. And he says that will bring results. This is happening every day on social media, where if you don't agree with somebody, it no longer becomes a disagreement about ideas. If I can vilify you and shame you, I basically win the argument.
How did homosexual activists persuade the American Psychiatric Association in 1973 to remove homosexuality from its list of psychiatric illnesses and reclassify it as normal behavior?
Well, they actually did it by force. If you remember, they walked into the meeting and they began to shame the psychiatrists that were there. And they actually insisted on normalizing homosexuality. And within time, you know, the organization bowed to their request. A psychiatrist said that this was the first time in history that he saw an organization capitulate on the basis of pressure.
How do homosexual activists use the tactic of public shaming to intimidate Christians?
Well, they do that all the time by calling you names. You're a bigot. They love the word phobia.
Homophobia.
You know, if they can say, yeah, homophobia, but they love the word phobia because if you can call something a phobia, you're saying that you're just a bigot and you have an internal problem. So there's homophobia, there's Islamophobia, and other kinds of phobias, because what they want to do, again, is to transfer the debate from ideas to a psychological problem that you have.
The Jerusalem Post featured a column entitled The Looting and Muting of America on June 18th, 2020, when Stuart Weiss watched the scenes of hundreds of store windows smashed and wild gangs of hoodlums allowed to rob at will as law enforcement stood immobile on the sidelines. What image was he reminded of?
Well, I think he was reminded of what happened in Germany. He was reminded of the Reichstag, the burning of the Reichstag under Hitler, where he began to see that you have this kind of mayhem. And in terms of Israel, he's talking, of course, about Kristallnacht. What we need to understand is that every revolution needs a pretext. And I point out that Kristallnacht happened because of a pretext. A Jewish student shot a German diplomat in Paris. Hitler used that, told the police and the fire department, we're going to be burning synagogues, but don't go and help the people. Let them burn. The German that was killed, his name was Ernst Rott. So we can almost imagine them going down the street saying, "Justice for Ernst, justice for Ernst," and this justified the burning of the synagogues.
Antifa pillages, breaks windows, sets cars on fire, and creates mayhem, all the while saying that they are combating hate. Dr. Lucer, that's pretty ironic, isn't it?
It really is, when they're very, very hateful, obviously. And we have certain people in law enforcement responsible for law who are letting them off the hook. In the city of Chicago, where people who pillaged and robbed and burned, they basically didn't spend a day in prison. So that's the kind of thing that we find, where the radical left is judged by a different standard than anyone else.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that to be silent is to speak. So how should the Christian speak out?
Oh my, every chapter in my book has a response of the church. When we're shouted at, we should not shout in return, we should speak. But we need to speak. And in answer to your question, Adam, it depends on every single Christian. For the woman who is in the workforce, representing Christ may mean one thing. For the mother who is in the home caring for her children, for her faithfulness to Christ represents something else. But everyone has to ask themselves the question, what does faithfulness require? For example, a teacher in the city of Chicago said that he was told, he's in the public school system, it is not enough for you to simply tolerate same-sex marriage. If you don't celebrate it, you could lose your job. Well, that's a line in the sand that he cannot cross. So if you're asking, what can we do to combat this? Every Christian needs to answer that question for themselves. We could talk about the role of the church in the culture and so forth, but we have to think in terms of, what does this mean for me?
Final chapter 10, entitled Wake Up, Strengthen What Remains, you point to a compelling passage in Revelation 3 in which Jesus confronted the church of Sardis. What did he say?
Well, he said, you have a reputation of being alive, but you're dead. And then he says, strengthen what remains. The problem with the church in Sardis is that they no longer saw the world as an enemy. So they submitted to the world.
Oh.
And I point out there that they submitted in the area of sexuality. But there, Adam, Jesus said, even there still are some names in Sardis who have not soiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. If your church isn't what it should be, there may be among you people who are like-minded, who are committed to fidelity, committed to purity and honesty and powerful witness. And so what we need to do is to lock on with them and do what we can to represent Christ and the gospel in a nation that has lost its way.
Dr. Lutzer, you and your wife visited ancient Sardis. What did you discover there next to the 3rd century church building?
We discovered a pagan temple. Some churches were built up against a pagan temple. And you can interpret it one of two ways. Either A, the church wanted to be where things were the darkest. That's one way to interpret it. And the other way to interpret, the church felt comfortable next to the pagan temple. You could worship in one place and then you can go to the other. Probably that's the way we should interpret it, where the church was totally submissive to the culture and its pressures.
And you note that today's pagan temples can be accessed through the computer, tablet, or phone. We're talking about pornography.
Oh, exactly. This is, of course, the great bane that has come to us as a result of the Internet. When it comes to the Internet, Satan says, this is my territory. Now, of course, you and I know that the Internet is used. You use it. We use it. But it has to be bought out of the culture and its darkness, because it is a place where there is lots of darkness.
Finally, Dr. Lutzer, you say there are 3 things you believe Jesus is saying to the church. I want to mention those things and have you elaborate. Number 1, be resolved to be gospel-driven in your life and purpose.
I make a distinction between the gospel and what is called the social gospel. What we need to do is to make sure that we have the gospel and that we're not confusing it with other issues.
Number 2, you believe Jesus is saying, be resolved that you will not bow to the culture's sexual revolution.
there is submission all over because of the cultural pressures.
You share the story of Nadia Bowles Weber, author of Shameless, who taught that all shame comes from the devil, and said a woman named Cindy, who ripped out the 8 pages that referenced homosexuality from the Bible and threw them in the fire, was to be commended.
What we need to do is to recognize that we cannot submit in that way. And finally, Adam, I also talk about our own purity. We as a church need to be able to stand strong against the culture.
The book is We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. Dr. Erwin Lutzer has been my guest, pastor emeritus of the Moody Church in Chicago, Illinois. Unbelievably eye-opening as we've discussed this book over the last 2 days. Dr. Lutzer, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
If you missed part one of this conversation, make sure to go back to generations.org/radio and look for the broadcast that aired on Monday, May 31st. I'd love to hear from you about this 2-part conversation. Email me at adam@theworldview.com. That's adam@theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson, as we lay down a vision for the next generation.